Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's segment of Afternoon Satsang. Taking off from where we had left off a fortnight ago, we will continue to delve into the inner meaning and the significance of the Sri Satya Sai Suprabhatam. The Suprabhatam is one of the first prayers that we begin the day with, especially as Sai devotees. It is part of the curriculum, it's part of the schedule in the hostel and all the educational institutions that are associated with Bhagwan, and in any sadhana camp or the youth conference or any such congregation, as part of the sadhana, the day begins with Suprabhatam. It begins at a time called the Brahma Muhurtam, which is considered as the most fruitful, most pure, most wonderful time of the day to achieve spiritual progress. Why is the Suprabhatam so important? We get to know when we go through the inner significance of the Suprabhatam. We have already discussed a few stanzas of that, of this beautiful hymn and the prayer. And we shall be continuing today where we had left off last week. But before we go into that, let us offer our most humble salutations at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. And let's welcome Brother Prem as always. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvindan, is we are here to continue with the study of the Suprabhatam as we started a couple of weeks back. As you rightly said, this is very much part of the schedule of the hostel, of many devotees' lives. In fact, I'm sure many, many devotees still begin their day with this. And as we saw even the last time when we were discussing about this, it's not merely a prayer which is meant to wake up Swami alone. I mean, it's not that Swami sleeps and he needs to be woken up, or this is a ritual meant for that. But it is more to awaken the divinity within. And that is how we had spoken about it. That's how we had discussed the first four stanzas of the Suprabhatam.
You know, very, very beautiful and poignant, because recently we came across an article in the Sanatana Sarathi which goes into the inner significance of the Suprabhatam. Swami says that God is existing in three different levels: the gross level, the subtle level, and the causal level. What they call as the sukshma, the karana, and the sthula. The sthula, the sukshma, and the karana sharira. The three levels. So, at a gross level, of course, Bhagwan is that lovely, endearing, beautiful form with a halo mop of jet black hair, those beautiful lotus eyes, the moon face, that lovely mole on his cheek, that form that we love so much. That is the gross. The subtle is the presence of Swami as the inner motivator of all the beings on earth. This is as Bhagwan has said. And in the causal aspect, he is the all-pervading, omnipotent cause and course of the universe. So there are three different levels, and the Suprabhatam, while superficially appears to be at the physical level, if we go into a little depth, we realize that it is directed towards the subtle aspect of the Lord. And as Swami says, in the subtle aspect, he exists as the inner motivator for all the beings on this earth. Now, I was reminded of a personal experience wherein, I think it was the year 2004, and we were all planning for a drama to be staged in Sai Kulwant Hall for the Independence Day. And this was the first ever Independence Day drama, if we can call it, to be staged in the Sai Kulwant Hall. It began on a very, very interesting note. One of my classmates came to me and he said that he had a dream in which Swami had told him that I would be giving the central theme for that year's Independence Day drama. And when he told this to me, I was very surprised and shocked, because I had no clue about it. I had no idea. I had not thought about it. Now, this classmate of mine asked me, didn't Swami tell you in a dream or in some other way as to what should be the theme of the drama? I said, no, I don't know anything at all. He said, we have only 10 more days left. I think you should definitely, connect with Swami and get the theme, because this is what Swami told me in my dream. Now, this is a very dear friend of mine. I trust him, and that's why I was wondering about what should be the theme of the Independence Day drama. The next day, while having bath, somehow the word Swarajya, Swarajya, which loosely is translated as independence, kept coming again and again in my mind. And, you know, as they say, the showers are a place of a lot of inspiration. There's inspiration from the bathtub as Archimedes derived, and there is inspiration from the shower as many modern day people have derived. In Archimedes' time, probably there were no showers. But I got an idea, and of course, like Archimedes, I didn't come running out shouting Eureka. But the idea was that Swarajya can be split as Swa and Rajya. Swa meaning self and Rajya meaning rule. So while it is translated as self-rule or self-government, in a higher level it is self, which is Atma, and rule of the Atma. When the Atma is considered supreme, that is true independence. Now, this was an inspired idea, and I shared it with this friend of mine and the others in the group to decide what program should be made for their mandir. I confess that this friend has said that Swami told that I will be giving the theme. That's why this is my inspiration. This is my inspired idea. That is what I told, and it went on. So many things happened. But the climax was on the 14th of August, one day before the Independence Day. Swami called a couple of us into the interview room, in quotes, to know about the details of the drama. It was a wonderful 40 minutes interview wherein Swami revealed, stated and shared so many beautiful things. But one particular thing I want to highlight there is, when Swami was speaking to the Vice Chancellor, who was also present there, Swami said, Swarajya is often misunderstood as just independence at a political level. Swa means Atma, and Rajya is rule. It is only when the Atma rules can you truly be independent. Now, as Swami said this, I was almost like, you know, bursting at my seams with excitement. And I said, Swami, this is exactly what we are telling in the drama. This is exactly what we are saying in the drama. You know, twice I repeated that because I was so thrilled and excited. And, you know, Swami so coolly just told the Vice Chancellor, see, if I tell once to my boys, they understand it. Later on, thinking about this incident, I felt that, you know, either in a dream or through a book or a message, or no way had Swami communicated this to me in any traditional sense. But that is when I realized that what comes from deep inspiration, an inspiration that gives you joy and thrill and excitement, that inspiration is Bhagwan himself. And this is what came to my mind when I read in that article in Sanatan Sarthi, which said that in the Sukshma form, what is Swami in the Sukshma form? It is not him possessing some other being and that being acting like Swami. It's not like that. The Sukshma Sharira, or the subtle form of Swami, is present in everyone, because Swami says he is present as the inner motivator. And that one experience proved to me that any genuine inspiration that thrills you, fills you with joy, love and excitement is nothing but Swami communicating with you as the inner motivator. And this Suprabhatam, the whole hymn, is directed towards waking up that Swami within. Swami is always awake, but making us awake to his presence within us as the inner motivator, as the one who inspires us from within. This whole hymn is directed towards that objective.
Absolutely. I think the very fact that we were discussing with some of the alumni, one of the most interesting feeling or an emotion that we went through when we were in Swami's presence, it's very difficult to capture in words. Here was the Swami in front of us, and we were trying to catch his attention. We were trying to convey something to him. We were trying to get him to look at us, speak to us, or get a Pad Namaskar. But at the same time, we were always convinced that he was also the indweller, right? And if we now look back at it, we had no qualms in putting both together and having harmony between both the ideas. Hmm. The fact that you're trying to please the Swami, you're trying to do a drama for him, you're trying to put a music program in front of him. But all the while, even during the practice, we always knew that, you know, Swami is seeing the effort, Swami is seeing this is the thing. That was the beauty, Swami, that experience that Swami gave, where, you know, we did not find that paradoxical or something difficult to relate to. And with Swami, nothing would ever be physical, right? Be it a worship like this or a festival, Swami would always talk about the inner significance of a festival. Something as simple as giving a letter to Swami or giving something in person to Swami, as one of the old students was once sharing recently, he was narrating a very simple incident, but how Swami was playing with words and telling the students there that everything that you do is a little more than physical when it is, you know, when Swami is involved. So he was saying that he was sitting on the portico and Swami was coming for darshan, and that day he had a letter with him. And he was trying to give that letter to Swami. And when Swami came close to him, he kind of knelt down. And even as he did that, the boy next to him knelt down with a handkerchief. Right? And Swami looked at both the boys and very beautifully Swami said, this is a letter and a handkerchief. Swami said, hand your grief, hanker for the chief.
Wow.
He said, this is hand your grief. If you give a letter to Swami, you are handing over all your grief and problems to Swami. It's like a surrender. And the handkerchief the boy was holding, Swami said, hanker for the chief. Right? Something as simple as an act as that, Swami would always invite us to go a little deeper, little to the subtler side of understanding that thing rather than just looking at it physically. And that's why even the Suprabhatam is not about, you know, Swami sleeping in Jajur Mandir or Swami sleeping in the Mandir and we are trying to wake him up. It is purely, as you said, the inner motivator has to be woken up. The inner motivator has to get up. And as we spoke last time, he should become the doer of our actions rather than we performing actions in a, you know, kind of an autopilot mode. That's what we do. You know, we eat food. If you like it, Swami would say you swallow it. The moment you don't like it, you spit it out, which means you're letting your senses do the decision making. And primarily that's how we go through life. Constantly, you know, this is what makes me happy. This I don't like. This person I like. This person I hate. Instead of that, Swami says, from the deep motivator within. And the whole idea of the Suprabhatam is to wake up Swami and say that, Swami, I'm starting my day and I want you to speak my words. I want you to do my actions.
So we had gone through, I think, after the introductory couple of stanzas, we went to two more stanzas we have covered. One is Chitravati Tata Vishala Sushanta Saude and Twannama Kirtana. Very, very interesting that, you know, the third stanza, while it gives the location of Bhagwan, it's almost like describing where Swami stays in a physical plane, it also does so at the subtle plane. Because it says that the abode of Bhagwan within us is in a vast, quiet building called Prashanta. Which means, you know, when Swami says it's only in the depths of silence that the voice of God can be heard. The depths of silence, of course, also has a physical and an inner meaning. The physical meaning is the physical silence. And the inner meaning is the stilling of the mind, where thoughts cease to exist. Just like the Manasa Sarovara, the placid lake of the mind, when it is absolutely free of any turbulence, you can see right through into the inner depths. In the same way, that tranquility is described as Prashanta. And it is said that that supreme peace is the abode of the Lord. And it's on the banks of the Chitravati. And the author who had written the article in the Sanatana Sarathi, he was inspired to consider the river as symbolic as our own Sushumna Nadi, the solar plexus, through which the Kundalini power flows. So he says that this building called Prashanta is present on the Sushumna, in the Sushumna Nadi, where the sun of Satya Sai rises, you know, it brings effulgence and splendor, and in the absence of that splendor, nothing is activated, nothing can function. Because in the physical sense, the sun is needed as the harbinger of activity. Everything wakes up when the sun comes. Similarly, the body for the being to function, the mind, the senses and the intellect have to be activated. And that is activated by the sun called Satya Sai. That is the inner significance that we had gone through for the third stanza. Then the next few stanzas of this hymn, one we went through last time also, the Twannama Kirtana, the stanzas refer to five different types of devotees who gather at Prashanti Nilayam. So last week we had finished Twannama Kirtana. That stanza refers to one kind of people who gather at Prashanti Nilayam, eager to uplift themselves by evoking Bhagwan's grace. That is those who are engaged in karma or activity. the Kirtana Rataha. That is, they take delight in praising. You know, they do activity directed towards adoration, using the senses and the pranas for doing karmas under the guidance of the divine within them. So that is the stanza which we have completed. From there we move on to today's stanza, which is Adaya Divya Kusumani Manoharani. It describes another section of people who are coming for Bhagwan's darshan. But I think before we go into that and discuss more about this stanza, we should listen to its rendition and its word-to-word translation meaning.
Adaya Divya Kusumani Manoharani Shripada Pujana Vidhin Bhavadangri Mule Kartum Mahotsukataya Pravishanti Bhakta Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhatam.
So the meaning of that fifth stanza is bringing holy flowers with captivating colors and fragrance for worshipping thy lotus feet in the form as prescribed by the scriptures. Thy devotees are coming in with great yearning and enthusiasm. O Lord Satisai, blessed be thy wakefulness. We pray for an auspicious day.
So in this stanza, we see the other kind of people who are coming. The first we saw, Tvannama Kirtana, are those engaged in karma or activity, bodily level. That is symbolic of people at the bodily level. This next stanza speaks of the bhakta, the devotees, who have maha utsukha, meaning great yearning. For what? For Shri Pada Puja, that is worship of the auspicious lotus feet of Bhagwan. And for that, they have brought Divya Kusumani, that is the holy flowers. Now, these are not just the botanical flowers. They are also botanical flowers, but they are much more than that. They are holy flowers. And, you know, Swami often refers to the Hridaya Pushpam, the flower of one's own heart. These are all the good qualities, the flowers of good qualities, the sattvic vasanas, purely motivated impulses and attitudes. So, this stanza refers to devotees who symbolically represent the mind, which is the seat of devotion, which has now become full of holy, creative, loving thoughts and aspirations. So, while Tvannama Kirtana stood for the body, the Adaya Divya stands for those at the level of the manas, the mind, which keeps, you know, Swami often says the mind keeps going about like a fly. It sits on good things and bad things alike. Such a manas should be directed, you know, which it is the senses that keep pulling it everywhere. So therefore, such a mind should be directed only towards God, only towards good. More importantly, only towards God. Desire should only be for God. So such people are, you know, represented by this stanza.
And talking about the flowers that need to be offered, and very clearly it says, as you pointed out, it says Divya Kusumani. It's Kusumani flowers. And when you say Divya Kusumani, you mean divine flowers, and they're not ordinary ones. And in fact, it's a very beautiful discourse. We've made multiple references to it in our articles. And Swami delivered in the year 2000, I think 22nd of August 2000. Where Swami speaks about what are the flowers that God wants you to offer to Him.
Wow.
Or what are the flowers that have to be offered to Swami. And in the prelude to that list, Swami says that what is the point of you offering flowers to me which is grown in somebody else's garden, and it is grown by somebody else's effort, and only through God's grace it grows. You know, nature is, nothing happens in nature without God's will. Then what is the point in you coming and offering me such flowers which fade away, which have not come from your fruit, from your effort, and you've just bought it from the market and give it to me? And then Swami goes on to say the eight flowers that need to be offered to God. Probably will not have the time to go into each one of them, but Swami very clearly mentions what are those flowers. He says the first flower is ahimsa, or non-violence. The second flower is indriya nigraham, or sense control. The third flower, Swami says, is Sarva Bhuta Daya, to have compassion to all beings without any distinction.
Living beings.
Right. Mm. The fourth flower, Swami says, is Kshama Pushpam, or the flower of forbearance. And we know that that's one quality which is so very dear to Swami. And the fifth flower, Swami says, is Shanti Pushpam, the flower of peace. And the sixth flower is Tapo Pushpam, or the flower of penance and austerity. The seventh flower, Swami says, is Dhyana Pushpam, or meditation. And finally, the eighth flower is Satya Pushpam, or the flower of truth.
You know, when you speak of these flowers that we need to offer to Swami, I am reminded of an incident that Ramakrishna Reddy sir would narrate in the old bungalow days. Old bungalow, that is the residence of Bhagwan before the Trai Brindavan came up at Whitefield in Bangalore. The students there had this practice of garlanding Swami, offering flowers to Swami on a daily basis. And one day Swami actually asked the students as to where they were getting these flowers from. And they said they were getting it from the shops outside. And Swami asked what was the price. I don't remember the little details. But when the cost of those flowers were told, Swami said, why do you want to spend so much money and buy these flowers? There are flowers in our gardens only. Why don't you pluck those only? Why do you want to go and purchase the flowers? So the students agreed, and thus began the practice where they would come and select the choicest of flowers from the gardens in the ashram and offer it to Swami. After a while, Swami asked, why are you plucking these? Where are you getting these flowers from? They said, from Swami, from the gardens. Then Swami apparently told all of them that, why do you want to pluck the flowers? They look so much more beautiful on the plant itself. Then the student said, no, Swami, we want to offer those flowers to you. Swami said, see, when you wave the camphor and offer aarti to me, in the similar manner, when I'm coming out, look at the flowers, point to the flowers with your palms, and just, you know, offer those flowers by waving in the air towards me. I will receive them and I'll be happy. And that is how this practice of, you know, offering flowers daily actually declined and it was stopped. And I also feel at an inner level, Swami taught such a beautiful message here that, yes, God loves flowers. That is why in any temple we go, any place of worship, flowers abound all around the idol and all around the sanctum sanctorum. Yes, but not these physical flowers. The flowers that the Lord is looking for is those of noble feeling, the feelings of love, the feelings of devotion. Because that is what Swami wants. Swami said, yeah, with love and feelings you offer it. I will accept the flowers of your love and feeling. You need not actually give me a physical flower. So, time and again, Swami has emphasized it in different ways that He is interested in our Hridaya Pushpam, the flower of our heart, the noble feelings, the love, the devotion, not just the physical flowers. I think these are the divine flowers that we offer when they say Divya Kusumani Manoharani.
You know, talking about flowers, I'm reminded of another incident with brothers from the Telugu team were once sharing. I think in their conversations with many of the old devotees, they spoke to some of the devotees from the 60s. Now, this is one particular family. I don't know where exactly it happened. I think maybe during Swami's travels or when Swami was staying in the mandir itself in the early 60s. There was this one particular family, and Swami would always ask the lady of that family to make garlands for Swami, right? So it used to be her everyday task. She would make a garland, and that is the garland which used to be put on Swami as soon as Swami comes out, and I think during the Dashara festival or something like that. And as understandably, the other devotees grew a little jealous. They said, you know, why should the same person do garlands every day and we should do it and all that. And this lady was saying that, yeah, sure, why not, all of you also should do. So one day she decided not to make, and she allowed the others to do it. And but, you know, Swami insisted that the garlanding should be done only by that family, right? So even if anybody else has done, so she told those people, let's see, I mean, I can let you make the garland, but either you go and tell Swami that you want to garland, or you let me do the garlanding part of it.
Hmm.
So none of them had the, courage to go and tell Swami. So they said, no, we'll only make the garland and you can offer it to Swami. So that day she was saying that they had made this beautiful garland of roses and all that. And when Swami came out, and they put this garland on Swami, and Swami said something which was very uncharacteristic. You know, generally Swami does not use that kind of language. Swami said, he made a face and he said, this garland stinks. He said, and then Swami used a phrase which means the stink that you get, you know, a body odor which you get from workers.
Mm.
Right? Usually that's what she was very surprised when Swami said that, because Swami never makes references to something like that, or, you know, some kind of casteist remark. It could be classified like that if you don't understand Swami.
Mm.
So she was surprised that Swami was saying this, but she knew that there was something more to what Swami was saying. And Swami was saying that I'm getting the smell of, you know, the body odor of workers or something like that. So after this episode was over, she went back to the family which said that they would make the garland. And she said, you know, did you make the garland? What happened? So then they said, no, we didn't have the time. So we went to the market and we bought it. Right?
Mm.
So what Swami was referring to is not necessarily, you know, the body odor of some workers, or the fact that workers are a class which is lower, nothing like that. Swami was saying the only difference is, here was a family which was doing it really as an offering. Right? Because she used to say that entire process of garland making, from plucking the garland flowers and sitting and making, she used to do it like a ritual. She used to keep constantly chanting Swami's name and doing bhajans. And for her, that was a complete offering. The moment you say that, you know, I'll give this money and I'll buy it from... So Swami was saying that the offering is missing. The flower is still there, the garland is still there. But, you know, that offering is missing. And what a beautiful way in which Swami was saying that, you know, a person who is going to do that work for you because of the money that you're paying, there is no devotion in that.
That's labor.
Right. And Swami was not looking for the fragrance of the flower, but Swami was looking for the fragrance of devotion behind that garland.
It reminds us, Prem, even when we would go to Mandir for our birthday celebration, we would spend time actually removing the clothes, and, you know, we would spend an hour or two in preparation for going for the blessing, more than the actual blessing itself. So, as you rightly said, it is about the fragrance of the feelings and not the actual flower. There is some more beautiful meaning that is there, but we will go into that after this quick little break.
உற்ற தேகத்தை உயிர் மறந்தாலும் உயிரை மேவிய உடல் மறந்தாலும் நற்றத்தவர் உள்ளிருந்தாகும் நலம் தரும்
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing the stanza from the Suprabhatam, which begins with Adaya Divya Kusumani Manoharani. The next line goes as Shri Pada Pujana Vidim Bhavadankri Mule. It says that the devotees are arriving with these flowers to be offered for Pada Puja. We have read many accounts of how our Bhagwan would graciously permit devotees to do Pada Puja, wherein he would sit on a chair and they would worship his feet to their heart's content with flowers, leaves, fruits, chandan, kumkum, haldi, all this. And in the end, they would wash his feet to consume that water as teertham. They would share that with all their family members. And most beautifully, they would paint his soul with either chandan or kumkum and then take those footprints, foot impressions on a white handkerchief or a white cloth. And we have visited multiple devotees' homes where they treasure and cherish this. In fact, at Gindi in Chennai, where there is the Shirdi Baba temple, the first ever Shirdi Baba temple in the world. In fact, Radio Sai has a special story about that done by Brother Bishu. And if you have not watched it on YouTube, you better go and watch it. It's so beautiful, so enlightening, so uplifting. So over there, when Swami's Pada Puja was performed and his souls were painted with these chandan and kumkum and he pressed them on the cloth, huge footprints manifested. Not the footprints of a dainty being who is only 5 feet tall. It looked like that of a being who is 7 feet tall. And many are the mahimas that Swami, many are the leelas that Swami has done through Pada Puja. But, you know, as time passed and the number of devotees coming to Bhagwan increased, it exploded exponentially. It wasn't possible for Swami to allow Pada Puja on a regular basis. Very, very rare few Pada Pujas. I think I was lucky to witness one at Hadshi, where Swami allowed the entire Jadav family to do Pada Puja, but that was a brief 5 minute, 6 minute ritual. But what I remember is in Trai Brindavan, during a Trai session, Swami clearly said that Pada Sevanam or Pada Puja, it's also one of the forms in the Navvida Bhakti. Swami said that it doesn't mean physically worshipping the feet of your master, guru or god. Of course, you can do that as a starter, as a beginner. But Swami said, true Pada Puja is to walk in the footsteps of your guru, master or god. Satya Sai avatar has descended to the earth and the Satya Sai avatar has walked on a path, on the path of Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema. If we want to do true Pada Puja, true Pada Seva for Swami, we have to walk on the path that have been walked by the avatar. That is true Pada Puja. And I think as we begin the day, we chant this, we sing this with the idea, with the intention that we will be able to follow in the footsteps of our dear Swami.
I mean, absolutely. I think when we are talking about the inner significance of each of these words and each of these actions, there is no better place to look for the inner significance than in Swami's own words. And it is, as you said, multiple times you've heard Swami say that. And this is the true Pada Seva. And I think even when we did the Navaveda Bhakti, I think we spoke extensively only about this as Pada Seva, where it says, Vishnu Smaranam, and then comes Pada Sevanam, where we said that this is the Pada Sevanam that Swami spoke. And in fact, every time Swami would speak about Navaveda Bhakti, Swami would make it a point to mention this, that this is the Pada Sevanam that the Lord wants, right? You know, you might want something else. You might want to do something more elaborate for your memory. But if you ask what does Swami want as the offering that you do, just like we spoke about the flowers which Swami wanted, the Pada Sevanam which Swami wants is this, that can you walk the words of Swami, the message of Swami.
And then, you know, the next line, it says, Kartu Mahot Sukhataya Pravishanti Bhakta, meaning these devotees are coming with great enthusiasm and yearning. This statement can be read both ways. One is that devotees have got great yearning and they're coming for darshan. Or the other way of reading it is, those who wish to have darshan need to have great yearning. Again, I'm reminded of a very popular I mean, it's popular in the sense, I love to quote this incident that happened in 2006 during the Kodai Canal visit when Swami had taken students. That was the time when Bhagwan needed support to walk. He was still, not 100% confined to the chair. He would get up and walk with a little assistance. And this presented itself as a great chance and opportunity to all the students there. Because every day, one student would get the chance of holding Swami's hand and, you know, escorting him from the chair to his room. And every day what would happen is, whichever student gets the chance to hold Swami's hand, all the other students will look at him with half possible envy, positive envy, and, you know, admiration, like, lucky fellow, man, this fellow is very lucky today, he got the chance. Because it was not as if the person sitting in the front only will get the chance. It's not like if you're sitting right below Swami, you get the opportunity. It depends on whose hand Swami chooses to hold. So everybody would be looking out for who is the lucky boy today. So on one such day, when Swami picked one student and was holding his hand and walking, now before anybody else could look at him with envy or admiration or whatever you may call it, Swami himself looked at all the other students and said, how lucky, no? This boy is so lucky, you know. I'm stating it because this is a radio show. Of course, Swami told it only in expressions. People could see that Swami is saying, this boy is so lucky. And everybody just folded their palms, and what could they say? Swami was saying that this boy is lucky, so yes, he is lucky. They were just nodding in agreement. When abruptly Swami said, holding hand, not important. Now, this came as a shocker for many, because why else do you wish to join as a student here? Do you yearn to go to Kodai Canal, travel with Bhagwan, so that you can get closer to him, you can touch his feet, you can hold his hand, you can get an interview? Everything is about proximity. We do everything for proximity, and Swami is now saying holding hand is not important. But immediately after saying that statement, Swami followed up with the next statement in which he said, but yearning to hold Swami's hand, very important. That is what will give you everything. Now, if we take these two statements, this can be the mantra for our life. It shows that it doesn't matter how many times we touch Swami's feet, how many times we got a chance to offer flowers to him, how many interviews we got, all that is not as important as how much we yearned for those opportunities. And that is not what something you or me are saying. It is what Bhagwan himself has said. Swami said, holding Swami's hand, not that important. But yearning to hold the hand, very important. Which means, when you yearn to hold his hand, irrespective of whether you get to hold or not, you are blessed. And even if you hold his hand, if that yearning is not there, then it is fate. It's a sad thing. It's of no use. So it's all about that yearning. And again, that is captured in this third line, which says that the devotees are coming. They have great yearning to have your darshan. And that is why in this time when physically Bhagwan is not available with us, we understand that just like Mirabai achieved what Radha achieved. Radha was existing during the physical presence of Krishna. Mirabai didn't exist in the physical times of Krishna, and yet she achieved what Radha achieved by having the same yearning. In fact, if we go through the Radha Bhakti drama that Swami has written and the life of Radha, we realize that later Radha too gave up her attachment to the form of Krishna, and she realized that it is only through her yearning that she can make Krishna the prisoner in her heart forever. That is why later on, you know, Radha gives up that attachment to the physical Krishna, and that is what makes Radha into Radha. Where Swami says that for Radha, the Aadhar is the Dhara of Arad. Swami plays on that word by changing the letters. Radha, Aadhar, Arad and Dhara. Says that her Aadhar, the basis for her, is the Dhara, the flow of Arad, which is reverence and worship and love. So, it's all about yearning, pining, craving for Swami, which is much, much, much more important than what actually chances we have got, or whether I have a kerchief that he held or a rose that he held, or whether I got an interview or not.
And if you go back to the idea that we were talking about, the whole process is to wake up Swami so that, you know, he starts operating through us, or become that motivator who is doing all of these actions. Swami would often say this, you know, it is like the Lord from within is always prompting you. It is not like he is a prompter for a few and he's not there to prompt for a few. Swami would say he's there as the conscience and he's prompting everybody. But it is for each one to decide whether they're ready to listen to him or not. And if you look at it when we were in Swami's presence, you know, one of the sights which was most common is people being very, very attentive to what Swami would say. Right? If, let's say that there's some distribution happening or some packing happening, you know, Swami would come when there is this Gram Seva packing happening. When Swami would come and stand there, everybody would be doing their work, but everybody will also be alert to, is Swami giving any direction? And you would see that, you know, even as devotees, many people would have noticed, Swami would just raise a finger and people would know that, you know, Swami is saying something or Swami is referring to something. It used to be a very beautiful sight because we were all so keen to listen to Swami and do what Swami wanted. And if you look at it, when Swami says that, when you said that it is that keenness, it is that yearning, they are here to do your Padaseva. When we said Padaseva, it is to follow Swami's footsteps. And when we attach that to keenness, and when you say that yearning to follow Swami's actions, it is about going through the day, being constantly conscious about what Swami is prompting from within. And he's definitely prompting. It's not that he's not prompting, but you should have the keenness and we should have that yearning to know what is Swami's direction in this particular point. And that is what this stands for. It is that always being alert to Swami's directions.
In the beginning, we said that this stanza refers to, it is symbolically representing the mind, the manas, which has this tendency to get dragged by the senses here and there. Like a fly, you know, that is the best example. The fly that sits on garbage and the fly that sits on honey and flowers. So, this yearning for Swami is what will ensure that the fly only sits on honey and not the garbage. So, that is this stanza, Adaya Divya Kusumani. With this, we conclude this stanza and move on to the next stanza. And as always, we'll begin by listening to it and the word-to-word meaning of that stanza.
Sandarshanagirati samyuta chitta vritya Vedokta mantra pathanena nasantya jasram Shri Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhata.
The meaning of that stanza is, wise persons from distant countries, moved by yearning to have thy darshan, have come and they are having great delight in reciting constantly mantras of the Vedas. O Lord Satyasai, blessed by thy wakefulness, we pray for an auspicious day.
As we had said, you know, the first stanza was for the body, the next was for the manas. This is for the buddhi. You know, we know that the mind is made up of four aspects. The manas, the buddhi, the chitta and ahankara. Adaya Divya referred to the manas. This stanza refers to the buddhi. That is why it is making a reference to the buddhaha. Buddhaha are the intellectuals or learned people. So, it says that, you know, making a mention of these learned people, the buddhaha or the intellectuals, it says that they have come from long distances. And this long distance can refer to geographical distance. It can also refer to the long distances of doubt. Because, you know, the buddhi is the discriminating aspect of the mind among manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara. So, for it is the discrimination aspect that will often get doubt as to what is right, what is wrong, because it has to discriminate between that. So, people who are coming from long distance can refer to both geographical distance and with great doubts. They are coming and they are reciting mantras or spiritual formulae, you know, the Veda mantras, which have been handed down by the sages from the past. So, this stanza refers to people, the Buddha, the intellectuals, and as it says, they are from everywhere, which means that everyone is welcome at the Lord's abode. but they should choose to come. Swami would often say in his discourses, who has invited you all over here? Nobody. You have all come on your own volition. That is very, very true. Nobody is forced to come to the Lord's house. It is those who are able to discriminate and realize that this is what matters in life. This is what is most important. This should be priority number one. They choose to come on their own. And that is the only condition that is put here. That is why I think it is stated that people from all around the world are coming, because all are welcome here. As Swami would say, there is only one caste, the caste of humanity. There is only one religion, the religion of love. There is only one language, the language of heart. And there is only one God, He is omnipresent. And that is what it is. Everyone is welcome, but the big but is over there, because it says you have to choose. And to choose, you need to discriminate. To discriminate, you need to know what is right and wrong. You need to get rid of all your doubts. So this is the stanza that represents such kind of people. And they are indicated in the stanza which begins with Deshantaragata Buddhastava Divya Murtim.
And another way of probably looking at it is when you say Deshantaragata, coming from different places and learned ones. It also means that it's not only learned in one scripture or learned in one religion. If you look at it, these are all coming from different places, meaning they come from different ideological beliefs, different religious backgrounds. Each one learned in their own way. You know, when you talk about buddhi does not necessarily mean that it should be buddhi which is backed by Vedantic knowledge or Vedantic wisdom.
Correct.
Or scriptural in that sense. You just have to be a keen student of life itself. That's what buddhi is always meaning. You know, Swami would always say that instead of just living, you consciously see that, am I really being happy? Am I really finding satisfaction when I satisfy my desires? That is what is buddhi. You consciously, you know, that is what differentiates the human life from an animal life. So anybody coming from any background but who has done this due discrimination and deep thinking would probably classify as what Swami is saying. I mean, what is said in this stanza, they're coming from different places, different backgrounds, from different ideological beliefs and philosophical leanings. But all of them have come, and very beautifully it says, Divya Murtim Samadarshana. It has not come merely to come and see the physical form, but to have the divine vision or the real vision. And Swami would always say that Advaita Darshanam Jnanam. If you're only able to see me as this body, then it is only darshan to the physical eye. But what we really come to see, come to achieve through this darshan of Swami is the ability to see Swami as one with us, right? And Swami would say, the day you see me as Advaita, as not being separate from you, then you become a jnani. And, you know, when you say that these are intellectuals, there's a difference between an intellectual and a jnani. A jnani is one who has reached that state. An intellectual is probably somebody who is trying to reach that state. So almost like, it is like saying that even those who are very well read, who have reached a certain state of spiritual progress, even they who are reaching, who are seeking that state of a jnani, are coming to you for that, you know, to bridge that gap between what they have reached and what they ought to reach. They have come seeking your darshan and your grace.
Now, speaking of Swami's darshan, there's something magical about it. I was just thinking, just think of some of the most beautiful spots on earth. The things that came in my mind for India, say either the Taj Mahal or the temples at Hampi, or let's say in US the Niagara Falls, whatever, beautiful sights. When we go to that place, we usually spend a day there or a couple of days max, and then we move on. But when people would come to Prashanthi Nilayam, they would stay for days, weeks, even months together, seeing what? The same person walk, you know, if you want to describe it most prosaically and in quotes, factfully, it's just one person walking out, one man walking out for about 20 minutes and going in. If you happen to be a devotee who didn't get an interview, for 2 months this would be your life. You would go and wait for 2 hours for a person to come walking out. He will walk and possibly take a letter from you or not, or whatever. He will walk, may look at you, may not look at you. And lot of people are there who are in the category where you have not been granted an interview, you have not given a letter, you might not even be looked upon, you know. Swami has not even looked at you. and he'll walk in, and that's it. That's what it is. And you do it day in and day out. There is something magical. I mean, you can't do this even to great monuments. You see the Taj Mahal 2 times and that's done. Yes, you go on, you capture a photo and you click a photo and go. You know, that is the magic about the form. That shows that it is a Divya Murthim. It is not just any other form. You can't replicate it, you can't copy it, you can't duplicate it. It is something very, very unique. Because, you know, after Swami left in 2011, one of the questions that we used to often face is, how is Puttaparthi now? Has the crowd declined? If we actually go and see, the number of people visiting has not declined. In fact, it has increased also. But possibly what has changed is the number of days those people stay for. Other than those who stay for Seva or some overseas devotees who come here as a pilgrimage for a month or a week or whatever it is. The stay of people has reduced. A lot more people come now, but they stay for 2-3 days and leave. What would happen then is people would come and stay for weeks and, as I said, months. And that is the fascinating thing about, that is what I feel is also the Sandarshanabhirati Divya, the Divya Murtim Sandarshanabhirati. The form is so enchanting and so beautiful that you never get tired of seeing it. I mean, you never get satiated seeing it. You want to see it over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, that is what we would do. That is what our day would be focused on, centered upon. Morning darshan, evening darshan, and if possible some darshan in between when Swami is going out for a drive. That is the magic of that form, which, as it is described, nitya nutana, ever new, ever new. Each moment feels new and you never get tired, you never get bored, you never get whatever, fatigued because of that form. And that aspect is also captured in this stanza.
I think we'll take a quick break, dear listeners. We have a couple of more stanzas to go. We'll go to that after this short break. Don't go away. We are continuing with this discussion on the Suprabhatam after this break.
Janula madhya tirugade jagapati chedulu teliyagalare nee sangati. Janula madhya tirugade jagapati చెడులు తెలియగలరే నీ సంగతి. చెడుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, చెడులు తెలియగలరే నీ సంగతి. చెడుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, చెడులు తెలియగలరే నీ సంగతి. హరిపో మరి గరుడమో, హరివో మరి హరుడమో ఎవరైన నేమి. అంతరిని బంగారు అని పిలిచే స్వామి, హరివో మరి హరుడమో ఎవరైన నేమి. అంతరిని బంగారు అని పిలిచే స్వామి, జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగమని. పుట్టపర్తిలో ఉన్న పుడమి అంత నీదే, పుట్టపర్తిలో ఉన్న పుడమి అంత నీదే. ఎట్టి ఎండకైన కొడుకు నీడమాలే, పుట్ట పత్తిలో ఉన్న పుడమి అంతా నీదే. ఎట్టి ఎండకైనా నీ కొడుకు నీడమాలే. రాతి గొంతు తడిపి తప్పి తీర్చిన చేయి, రాతలన్నీ మార్చేసిన రత్నాకర సాయి. రాతి గొంతు తడిపి తప్పి తీర్చిన చేయి, రాతలని మార్చేసి రత్నాకరసాయి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, చెడులు తెలియగలరే నీ సంగతి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, చెడులు తెలియగలరే నీ సంగతి.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing about the Suprabhatam and we completed the stanza number 6. The other aspect of the stanza number 6, which was mentioned, is about the learned people from all over the world coming and chanting Vedas. I don't know exactly which is the year in which the Suprabhatam was composed. We do know that the composer Tirumalachar came to Swami in the 50s, but I think it shouldn't be later than in the 60s. And in the 60s, I don't think that we had that many number of Westerners coming to Swami.
And chanting Vedas,
right? So the idea of him saying that people are coming from all over the world, learned ones are chanting Vedas. In our time, we have seen it. You know, there is this group called the Veda Union from people from Croatia and Poland who chant Vedas. We have a wonderful group from Japan who chant Vedas even in a manner I can't chant. They're so very precise in their pronunciation. There are groups from Italy. They used to come and learn Vedas because, you know, when we were old students, we were sitting in the old students block. They would come and sit behind us and they would learn. And many, many people, of course, all around the world, people are trying to learn, especially after Swami in between said that he wants everybody to chant Rudram. And when Vedam chanting took over from instrumental music for Swami's darshan, a lot of devotees have taken up chanting of the Vedas. And in a sense, Swami has made it so universal, because there are a lot of people who still have that hesitation of, you know, whether women can chant, whether people who have not been initiated, who have not had the Upanayanam, can chant. And Swami has made it very, very clear that all of these restrictions do not matter at all. Anybody can chant the Veda, the Gayatri Mantra. There are no restrictions. There are no specific times during which people should not chant. Nothing like that. All of this is meant to purify your heart. So if giving the condition that I am born of an impure birth, or this is an impure time of the day, none of that matters, because you are doing this merely for inner purification. So there should, none of these should become hurdles in you taking up the chanting of any of these mantras. And Swami has made it so universal in that sense.
And with that, you know, we shall move on to the next stanza. We finished the sharira, the manas, the buddhi. Then we are left with the chitta and ahankara, where chitta is the memory bank and ahankara is the identification, identity. So the next stanza actually speaks of the jignyasa, or those who are thirsting for knowledge. And before we go into that, I think, as always, we'll just listen to the stanza and its meaning.
Shrutva tava adbhuta charitra makhanda kirtim vyaptam digantara vishala dharatale smin jignasuloka upatishtati chashrame smin Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhata.
The meaning of that stanza goes, hearing thy marvelous tales and fame that has reached the farthest horizons, earnest seekers of truth have come to this place and are waiting. O Lord Satyasai, blessed be thy blessed by thy wakefulness, we pray for an auspicious day.
So as stated, this hymn mentions the jignyasu, or the sincere inquirer, the earnest seeker, uncommitted to any authority or path, and more evolved than mere devotees or the learned ones. So they have come in search of the divine consciousness within. And how they have come? They have come having heard the Adbhuta Charitra, that is the magnificent history of the mystery of the mystery of the Supreme One, and the Akhanda Kirti, which is the unbroken fame and glory of Sai, who is the resident of every being and everything. So this is what is represented by the stanza, that is the Jignyasu. The Jignyasus are considered as one state away from the Jnanis. When Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that there are four kinds of people who seek me, it is artha, artharthi, that is one who are diseased and sick in various ways, one who are seeking wealth or glory or, you know, any other kind of worldly status. And the third is the jignyasu. Jignyasu are those who are very keen, very eager to gain knowledge. Knowledge is their goal, the ultimate knowledge. Of course, that is also not the ultimate, because Krishna says the jnani seeks the Lord for the Lord's sake and not for anything else. So that level, it is, so the jignyasu is one level lower than the ultimate, and this stanza is for all those jignyasus. So this comes at the level of the chitta and ahankara. Now ahankara actually is negative when associated with the body-mind complex, but when it is associated, when one has Daivabhimana instead of Dehabhimana, as Swami says, it makes us realize our oneness with God. So this is at the level of the chitta. This aspiration is symbolic of the chitta, which is the prompter of the heart. And that is what it is. It says that these people who are seeking answers to life's questions, to questions on spirituality, they have come to you. And how they have come is because they have heard of your glories, your akhanda, akhanda meaning endless, which goes on continuously. Your endless fame and glory has reached their ears, and that is how they have come. In fact, if we go into how many, many devotees have come to Swami, there will be many in this category who have come listening to the glories of Swami, curious about it. Even, I think, Howard Murfitt writes in his book, like, I remember that first statement of the first chapter very clearly. I first heard about Sai Baba from a wandering mendicant or a wandering person. Somehow like that. He has just heard. So, Shrutva Tava, that is what it is. Shrutva Tava Adbhuta Charitra Akhanda Kirtim. Hearing to your Adbhuta, Adbhuta means magnificent, Charitram, history, and your Akhanda Kirtim, and your, endless glory, many have come. All these earnest seekers have come to you. That is what this stanza is speaking about.
And we know how many devotees who are really, you know, this kind of earnest seekers who have come, as you said, listening to Swami's glory. In the other series that we're doing parallelly, we're talking about one such individual, right? Hislop is somebody who came to Swami like that.
Mm.
He was a very, very deep seeker who heard about Swami and he was, I mean, he really wanted to come and see that is it possible that somebody is there like this? And similar to that is someone like Victor Kanu. Right, his story is also very similar. He sees the heights of success where he is an ambassador to the United Kingdom. He represents his country and then he loses his job. He goes through all of that and then he eventually becomes a very deep seeker of spirituality. You know, he wants to know what is life all about. Then he becomes a healer. And then he says that he's, I think, sitting in a gathering where a lady is talking about the Bible and Jesus and the miracles that he did. And very casually she mentions, you know, even today there is one who does miracles like how Jesus did 2,000 years ago, and his name is Sai Baba.
Hmm.
And he's so surprised to hear that because, you know, here's this lady who he has a lot of reverence for because she's the one who's taught him healing, I think something like that. And very casually she says that exactly like how Jesus did miracles, there's somebody who's doing miracles. And the moment he hears that, he wants to come and see. And of course that entire story, I mean, if our listeners have not seen it, there is a very beautiful dramatization of that entire sequence of events in the form of an animation series, the Miracles and Beyond series. We've done that, where when he comes to Swami, he realizes that he has seen the whole place in his dream. You know, he has a dream in which he's traveling through the skies and in the astral form, and he reaches a place which, you know, in his mind he recognizes as heaven. And there he sees all his forefathers are there in the spiritual form.
Mm-hmm.
And he's surprised and he's wondering, what is this place? And many years later, when he makes his first trip to Prashanti and he's driving past the Gopuram gate, he recognizes that it's the same place he saw in his dream.
Wow.
Right? And many, many devotees have come like that. When, as Swami would say, their seeking had ripened. It was right for they reached the right time to know about Swami and they hear about Swami and come. And there are many, many cases where people have been hearing about Swami in a certain sense, right? You know, a lot of people in India would have always heard about Swami because Swami is, in that sense, a popular figure. But there comes a time when suddenly knowing about Swami or hearing about Swami or reading some particular literature suddenly draws them to Swami. So it clearly shows that at a point when people are ready for that, they are suddenly drawn, and the stanza is a reference to that.
You know, cannot agree more with you on that, that it's about that readiness. When that time comes and they are ready, they are drawn. And I think that word Adbhuta Charitram is also used because it is not just, in one sense Adbhuta Charitram means the wonderful history, but it also refers to some magical and miraculous ways in which people are drawn. Because we have had... was it Sinclair when he had darshan of Swami in his hotel in United States? So there have been people who have, yes, it is Mr. James Sinclair, where he has narrated in detail how he had not once, twice or thrice darshan of Bhagwan in United States, even before he knew who Swami was. So when we say people having heard of Swami, it doesn't mean hearing it from another devotee's mouth, because now possibly there are millions of devotees of Bhagwan and they are spreading Swami's name, in the sense sharing experiences about him. But if we go back to the days when the Suprabhatam was composed, there weren't that many people. In fact, Swami himself did his own, you know, what we can say, publicity in that sense, because he himself reached out to people. You know, my own family, the way they came to Swami, very, very interesting, because my uncle actually got a transfer to Calcutta, an Indian city which is far away from his native place of Bangalore. It is so far that it almost felt like going to another country, and he was obsessed with not having to go there because of the transfer. He tried everything that was in his hands to get the transfer cancelled, but it could not happen. And that is when he just resigned and in a great state of worry went to bed. He had a dream in which he saw a person walking with a bull behind. You know, these are called Haridasas, and it's a common feature in Karnataka and Andhra Pradesh especially, where they go around with the bull, maybe other South Indian states also, go about in the bull playing the songs on their Shehnai, playing different songs basically their job is to remind the society of God's presence. Of course, in some places it is misused to make money, but that's another story. So he had this Haridasa who was very strange looking, who came and told him, you don't worry about anything, everything will be taken care of. And when he woke up next morning, he felt strangely peaceful and he thought, okay, it's all fine. I don't know what it means, but it felt good to get the dream. A few days later, Prem, imagine his shock as he's riding his scooter, as he's riding his two-wheeler in a place called Seshadripuram in Bangalore near a Rama temple. That Rama temple still exists to this day. There he sees a Shamiana put up and about 80 to 100 people listening to a talk. And he just bends down on his two-wheeler to see under the Shamiana who is that person who is giving a talk. To his shock, he sees that same Haridasa whom he saw in his dream standing and giving a talk there. Mm-hmm. So he parks his scooter, just runs and he says, who is this person? Who is this? Then they tell him, he's Satya Sai Baba. He's, you know, part two of Shirdi Sai Baba and he gets all this, he's God and all these things. He doesn't remember anything of the talk that happened there. But he was so spellbound and it was such a magical thing. Just imagine you see a random person in your dream and 2 days later you see that exact same person and you get to know that he is God who can solve all your problems. And that is how my uncle actually landed up in Puttaparthi to get his transfer cancelled because nothing else worked. He thought, let me see if this guy is God, can he cancel my transfer? And he says in the first interview that he got, I mean those days anybody who came would get an interview. I'm talking of 1962-63. When he got the interview, he says, first thing that Swami told him was, you are worried about leaving Bangalore, don't worry, you will always be in Bangalore. Now ask what you want. And he had nothing to ask because this is all he came for. Like how Swami says, you go to the Kalpavriksha and ask for coffee powder. He had come wanting to ask for this and it was granted even before he could ask it. And you know, just 3 years back, he actually passed away, Prem, and he passed away in Bangalore. That is why I feel you should be very careful what you ask God, because after that he tried actually to go out of Bangalore. He just could not. Because Swami told, don't worry, you will be in Bangalore. From 1963 to 2016, he was in Bangalore only. Well, that is another message that you be careful what you ask from God. But what the point of me narrating this is to show that when they say hearing his Adbhuta Charitram, people are coming. The Adbhuta Charitram is not just about somebody narrating Swami's miracles. It's also in these beautiful ways, dreams, astral visitations, projections, multiple ways in which Swami has pulled those whose time has arrived.
Very true. In fact, you know, even when you're talking about listening to miraculous events, even if it doesn't happen to us, any number of people are there who have heard miraculous events and they've brushed it aside. Right, you say that yeah, I have, you know, people must be cooking up some stories, and you know, somebody comes and says that something like this. I had a dream and I saw this. We would probably, many of the devotees who came later must have brushed aside some of these things, saying that oh, you know, these must be just all stories. But really, when the time comes, suddenly the same stories will draw you. Suddenly the same stories will catch your interest. And that is why Swami would so much say that, you know, it is the ripening of the fruit and nothing more than that. And as we always say, nobody comes earlier, nobody comes later. Everybody comes at the most appropriate time for their spiritual progress. Because yes, all of us would be happier to come to Swami much earlier than we have come. Right? Those who came in the 90s wanted to come in the 80s. Those who came in the 80s thought it would have been better if they were in the 60s. Even those who came in the 50s felt that, oh, how wonderful it would have been if we were Swami's classmates. Right? So I don't think anybody would really feel that I've lived enough years with Swami. You know, going with what you were saying in the previous verse, you know, how many ever times you see Swami, it is not enough. How many ever years you live with Swami, it is not enough. But it is that yearning and it is that appropriateness of that moment which really draws you to Swami. And what is it is what is mentioned here. When your yearning has come to a point where you can go to the next level, a jignasa is that. Right? Swami would say, an artha, arthati and jignasa. When you have ready to step beyond the needs of the body and the needs of the mind, the needs of the intellect are beginning to take priority in your life. I think that's the best time you get the guru, right? Otherwise the guru will be wasted. And when you find the guru, you have to go forward from jignasa. You should not step back or fall back into artha and artharthi. That danger is also always there. after coming to the point of jignasa, after having found this Sadguru, you'll have to go forward in that same direction.
And that is why I think that, as you say, the time is so important. That's why there are also people who came actually to scorn and to make fun or criticize or ridicule. Many such people also stayed back to pray and, you know, pay their homage, obeisance, and have become devotees. I think we had covered that elaborately in a couple or more satsangs, termed as they came, they saw, and they were conquered. So those wishing to listen to some such amazing stories of people who actually came to criticize and ridicule Swami, but were bowled over through happenings and incidents and stayed back. Like Prem said, even such people who came and stayed back, it's because their time had come. Because the same thing that attracts you and bowls you over and fascinates you, the same thing you may not even pay attention to if the right time has not come. So this is the stanza, and I think we have got 3 more stanzas left to complete our discussion on the Shri Satya Sai Suprabhatam. We will take up those 3 stanzas next week in our concluding episode. We hope that you are enjoying this. We are grateful to a couple of devotees who pointed us to this article in the Sanatana Sarthi and also to other resource materials which have been very helpful in our preparation for the Shri Satya Sai Suprabhatam. Do share in your feedback. Do write in whatever you wish to, your experience, your thoughts. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org, or as Prem will give you, there's also a WhatsApp number which you can message us to.
Right, you can send in your WhatsApp feedback to 9393258258, and we would be happy to receive any kind of suggestions or constructive feedback on what we are saying. And definitely we are also looking forward to more topics after this. So if you have any discussions that you would like us to take up, anything which is practical, anything which is philosophically deeper in Swami's message, you can send in those suggestions to us too, and it would be really helpful to us. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu for his segment Love to Love. We leave you with a song. We'll join you all again next week, 12:30, for the next episode of Afternoon Satsang.
प्यार तेरा है फूलों जैसा, बातें जैसे गीत सुधा, तेरी मुस्कानों में लगता मधुर कोई संगीत सजा, पुकारों की मूरत हो, हर सांसों की जरूरत हो तुम, मीत मेरे नवनीत सखा, साईं मां, साईं दिन है कितना सुहाना, जागी उमंगे गाए तराना, पंछी बादल ठंडी हवाएं, कदमों पे तेरे पलके बिछाए, भगवान अरमान प्यार तेरा है, फूलों जैसा बातें जैसे गीत सुधा, तेरी मुस्कानों में लगता मधुर कोई संगीत सजा, उपकारों की मूरत हो तुम, हर सांसों की जरूरत हो तुम, मीत मेरे नवनीत सखा, साई माँ, ओ साई
Listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.